Amen. Hey, if you have your Bibles, Mark chapter 12. Mark chapter 12 is where we're going to be today. For those of you who've gotten used to the little glitch here on the TV, this should hopefully be the last Sunday for that, all right? So don't get too used to it. And thanks for being patient with us. But Mark chapter 12, if you have your Bibles, a couple weeks ago, we saw that when God calls us into unpredictable, uneven, or uncertain situations or seasons, when he calls us into that foggy valley, into moments where we can't see the next step or we can't see around the corner, valleys that might be dark and dangerous, we must choose faith over fear and accept his call, knowing, okay, he's leading us down into this valley, he's with us in the valley, he's in control of the valley and all that might happen in the valley. And also knowing, though, that it's not for no reason that he calls us into the valley. His calling is always leading us to something greater and richer and fuller on the other side. Something that he really truly only fully knows, but something on the other side. So we must choose faith over fear and accept his call. Even if, as we saw last week, even if what he's calling us to seems impossible. Even if it seems impossible, because the impossible is possible with God's. Not without God, but with God's, the impossible is possible. So no matter what, even if we're Joshua standing before the impossible walls of Jericho, when the Lord calls us to action, we must, like Joshua, choose faith over fear, accept the call, and surrender and step. Surrender ourselves to the Lord as kind of an act of worship, and then step by faith. However, what that means is that if we say, okay, yes, I'm in, Lord, let's go, that sounds great, let's do it, then that means everything, like Abraham with Isaac, everything must be put on the table then. With a disposition that says, okay, Lord, it's all yours. Take what you want, when you want, how you want, it's all yours. So if we say, yes, Lord, I trust you in everything and I trust you with everything, let's go, Lord, then we had better surrender everything to him. But that can be a really hard decision. That's a lot easier said than done. That sounds like a nice Sunday morning bumper sticker or something like that, right? That sounds really nice and cliche, but then I go back into the valley this afternoon or tomorrow. That's a really hard decision to truly put everything on the table as Abraham did with Isaac and say, it's all yours. I surrender everything. Because there's so much unknown with that. I want to take you to World War II and 1940 specifically. On June 14th, 1940, Paris fell to Germany. So place yourself that year. Germany is seeking to devour Europe. And in June of 1940, Paris fell to Germany just 1 month after German forces stormed into France. 8 days later, after Paris fell, France signed a peace agreement with the Germans. And after that, a very unstable, questionable French state was put into place. At this point in the war, June 1940, the peace agreement between France and Germany put Great Britain in a very difficult, sensitive, and dangerous position. So Winston Churchill, the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom at the time, had a terrible dilemma now, and he faced a very daunting decision. With the peace agreement between France and Germany, Germany was now ready to seize, to take control of the entire French naval fleet. And it was one of the biggest groups of warships in the world. And so Churchill knew that if Hitler could control the French naval fleet, then Germany's threat to invade Britain and most likely secure Britain could become a reality. So Winston Churchill had this very difficult decision before him. A decision that Churchill considered would be crucial to the survival of the British Navy, which would be crucial to the survival of Great Britain at large, and no doubt from there would be crucial to the survival of the Western world as we know it. So what was the decision? Well, Churchill's decision was either he could trust the promises of this new, very unstable and questionable French government that they would never hand over their ships to Germany, and thus Churchill could just trust that and do nothing. Or Churchill could make sure that the French naval fleet warships never joined the German Navy by destroying them. By taking Great Britain and leading them to attack the French naval fleet. By attacking France, a normally very strong ally to Great Britain that carried with it a lot of unknown consequences. So with so much unknown, what would Winston Churchill do? We'll pause right there in that illustration for a moment. Now, all of us know that making decisions on any level is difficult. Sometimes we just take this for granted, but it's very difficult. There's so much to consider, so much to weigh, the risk versus the reward, the pros, the cons, the what-ifs. And even when we make a decision that we feel confident and sure about, and that we don't question for one moment, there's still the unknown. And with the unknown, there's this fact that so much can go wrong. So much can go wrong. For example, years ago, there was this woman who decided to take a vacation to Rio de Janeiro for New Year's. This was a big goal of hers for many years. And because she was going there to experience and witness the beach fireworks that had become famous for her, and she wanted to experience it. And so she saved all this money. She worked really hard. She made her plans. She got to Rio de Janeiro in the time for New Year's. She was super pumped, super excited, was on the beach on New Year's Eve, ready for the fireworks. However, just before midnight, she realized that she had left her camera in the hotel. This was back before everybody had a camera on their phones and so on. She left the camera in the hotel. So just before midnight, she decided to go up to the hotel, get her camera, and make it down just in time for New Year's and the big fireworks display and so on and so forth. However, as she went to go up to the hotel, she got stuck in the elevator. Something we're familiar with around here. She got stuck in the elevator. She would not get out of that little box until 3 a.m. She missed the entire festivities. She missed out on the why she came to Rio de Janeiro to begin with. When making a decision, there's so much unknown. There's much to consider, whether it's taking a certain trip at a certain time or taking a job, or moving, or putting your kids here, or investing there, or serving here, or giving there. And even when we make that decision, we feel confident, we're sure, and we don't question for one moment that decision, there's still that unknown. And with the unknown, so much can still go wrong. Things that you don't even realize, things that you can't foresee, like an elevator breaking, moments before the big celebration. So much can still go wrong. In business, they call this the unknown risk. And as the business world says, the unknown risk is more threatening than the known risk, since the risk can come up when you least expect it, when you have no idea it's coming. It's a risk that is nearly impossible to formulate a response plan for because you're unable, as they say, to proactively plan for it during the planning phase. It's something you don't know. It's something you can't see. A great example is the pandemic of 2020. No one saw that coming. People were getting plans ready to build houses, to start businesses, to move, to invest, and then bam, unknown risk. The elevator broke, so to speak. It's so hard making decisions because there's so many variables, so much unknown, and with the unknown, so much can go wrong. In other words, making decisions is like driving in the fog. Driving in the fog is difficult, we know this. It's impossible to see a mile ahead, let alone a block ahead of you. Sudden turns or cars seemingly appear out of nowhere. The light plays tricks on our minds. And driving in the fog can strike fear or hesitancy even within the most experienced, confident drivers, because the fog naturally carries with it the element of the unknown. And we don't like the unknown. And we don't like the unknown risk. Churches don't like the unknown and the unknown risk. That's why so many churches get stuck living in the past or stuck in the present. Because they're too afraid or hesitant about the future. Because the future naturally carries with it the unknown and the unknown risk. Because so much can go wrong. What if this happens? What if that happens? What if this doesn't happen? What if that doesn't happen? So we want to see what's beyond the ridge up ahead. What's around the corner? What's over the valley? We want to know how that move will turn out in the long run, how that degree will help us in 10 years from now, how that investment will perform over the next 25 years, what will happen to that real estate, how my kids will turn out, and so on. In other words, we want control over the unknown and the unknown risk. Unfortunately, we can't have control. It's impossible. And you and I, no matter how hard we try, we cannot see beyond the fog. We can do our analysis. We can evaluate. We can look at our probabilities and contemplate the risks versus rewards, pros versus cons. And we should do that. But ultimately, it's unknown. And we can't have control over the unknown, which makes a decision to surrender everything to the Lord very easy to say, very hard to do. Because surrendering everything to the Lord is stepping into the unknown with a lot of unknown risks. So then, if we're to trust the Lord in everything and to trust Him with everything and thereby surrender everything, meaning we're to always have an open hand disposition, our Isaac, so to speak, are to always be on the table in an act of saying to the Lord, okay, it's yours, it's all yours, take what you want, when you want, how you want. If we're to do that, but there's so much unknown with that, which makes it really hard to do, and we naturally don't like that, then what are we to do when faced with a decision? Like, for example, giving something or anything above and beyond tithes and offerings to a capital campaign. What are we to do? What are we to do in that decision to say something or to not say something or to invest or to move or to take that or to not take that? Well, when we're driving in the fog, what do we do? Again, it all comes back to trust and faith. When we're driving in the fog, we trust the person who put the slab of pavement beneath us and in front of us. And we drive slowly, sure, but we drive by faith. Every day, you and I are walking in the fog. Every day. It's impossible to see what's beyond that door, what's down that street, or beyond that decision, or beyond that valley, and how, for better or worse, that one decision can change everything. But also every day, we're called to surrender everything, which again carries with it the unknown, which makes it so hard to do, but easy to say. So what do we do? Well, it's as the proverb says, trust. Trust in the Lord's. Not just with part of your heart, but with all your heart. Don't lean on your own calculations, your own estimations, your own experience. Lean not on your own understanding. That doesn't mean don't take it into consideration, but just don't solely lean upon it. Instead, verse 6, in all your ways and everything you do, acknowledge Him, submit to Him, surrender everything to Him. And if you would do that, despite the fog, He would make your path straight. So what do? We trust the God who put the slab of pavement beneath us and in front of us. We drive by faith. As Paul would say, we walk by faith, not by sight. Frederick Buechner said it a little differently. He said, listen, this is what faith is. It's stepping out into the unknown with nothing to guide us, but a hand just beyond our grasp. That's faith. Faith looks like Peter in the boat that night on the water with the decision of, okay, do I take that step out of the boat or not? Do I put my foot out on the water and attempt to do that which I've always believed to be impossible, and do I then actually attempt to walk on water? Or do I do nothing and stay in the boat where it's comfortable and it's safe? It's a known place with no risk. And then Peter stepped out on the water. That's faith. And those who step out in faith, trusting the Lord in everything and with everything, and thereby surrendering everything in and by faith, will, as history teaches us, eventually, could be a day, could be a week, could be 10 years or 40 years, eventually will find themselves coming out from beneath the fog and see clearly where God has brought them. The question is, will we choose faith over fear? Will we surrender in step? Will we surrender everything on the table? Will we be all in? Will we step out of the boat, or will we stay in the boat? Look at Mark chapter 12, verse 41. Mark chapter 12, verse 41. If you don't have a Bible or one near you, you'll see the words here on the screen. Mark chapter 12, verse 41. This is what Mark writes. He says, Jesus sat down near the collection box in the temple. And as he's sitting there, he watched as the crowds dropped in their money. And many rich people put in large amounts. Verse 42. But then a poor widow came and dropped in two small coins. So Jesus, not wanting his disciples to miss this, called his disciples to him and said to them, listen, I'm telling you the truth. This poor woman has given more than all the others who are making contributions. How is that possible? Verse 44. Well, they gave a tiny part of their surplus, but she, poor as she is, has given everything she had to live on. Everything. So here's Jesus. He's sitting near the collection box near the temple where people put in their offerings. Here's kind of a rendering of what Herod's temple would have looked like in that day. But according to one source, the temple treasury was located in the court of women, which was just east of Herod's temple. Both men and women were allowed into this court, but women could go no farther into the temple buildings. And in the court of women, there were these 13 trumpet-shaped receptacles, the collection boxes, the offering plates. They were shaped like inverted megaphones, and they were positioned to receive donations and offerings of those coming to worship at the temple. These were the collection boxes. Again, these were the offering plates. So Jesus sits down, and he's watching people just kind of come through here, each one of them, and don't miss this. This is the creator, the sustainer, the overseer, and the provider of everything. Of everything. And what is he watching for? Well, you could say he's watching for how much they're putting in. Sure. But what he's really watching is not necessarily the size of the money, but the size of the faith. He's looking at the movement of their hearts, which is exposed in the movement of their actions. He's evaluating, again, where their hearts are, specifically in this moment, by where they put their money. And in doing so, Jesus is evaluating their faith. Who's all in? Who's not? Who's stepping out of the boat? Who's not? And it, in a way, has nothing to do with the amount of money, but their hearts. Again, their external action with their money revealed the internal disposition of their hearts. The rich, and there were many of them, they put in a large sum, a lot of money. That's great. But it was a small percentage of what God had given them. Small faith, little action. The widow, meanwhile, a widow and a woman, on the other hand, put in hardly nothing. But it was 100% of what God had given her. Big faith, big action. She gave two small copper coins, literally worth a fraction of a penny. If you were to basically compare that to today's standard in currency and whatnot, it would be something like $3 to $5 in U.S. dollars right now. That's it. $3 to $5. And this wasn't just something to her. It, again, was everything to her. She surrendered quite literally everything. She put Isaac on the table. And she said, "It's all yours, Lord. It's yours. I choose faith over fear. I accept the call. I surrender in step. It's all yours, everything." And listen, all of the people were faced with the same decision, whether they realized it or not. The decision was this: do I put in something and retain control of everything, or do I put in everything and retain control of nothing? Even though a lot of unknown comes with that, a lot of risk. And this widow took the latter decision. She took the road less traveled. She took the unknown in faith. She stepped out of the boat and walked. By faith, not by sight, down into that foggy valley, not knowing what awaited her. Again, she was a woman, she was a widow. A woman in a culture that despised women, wouldn't even let them go past this court, and a widow in a culture that didn't provide any avenues for widows to attain money outside of themselves, or unless it was outside of themselves. It carried a cost, and the cost was everything. It carried an unknown risk. What was now going to happen to her? That's everything she had to live on. How was she going to eat? How was she going to pay her bills? How was she going to make that payment? How was she going to do this, that, or the other? What would come of her? But in that present moment, the unknown and the unknown risk, she shoved it all aside and said, "Lord, I trust you. I have faith in you, that you are the creator, sustainer, and provider, and overseer of all things. So, Lord, I trust you in everything. I trust you with everything. Therefore, I surrender everything. It's all on the table for you." And I'm willing to guess that Jesus blessed her some way, somehow. We don't know. We don't know what came of her. But I'm willing to guess Jesus blessed her some way, somehow, and made sure that she was well taken care of. Not that, hey, because she put in everything, she's going to be rich now or something like that. No, but he would provide for her. Why? Because that's what God does. He blesses what we do when what we do is grounded in faith and trust in him. When it's done in faith in him and for him. When we choose faith over fear, we accept that call, surrender in step, trusting him in everything and with everything, including our money. When he's leading us, when he's with us and in control, he blesses what we do. He multiplies and blesses and provides off the sacrifices we make. He tears down walls. He causes water to part. He delivers from the fire. He delivers from the lion's den. He allows us to walk on water. When Abraham left Isaac on that table, it was everything. But in doing so, Abraham not only got to keep Isaac, but God chose to then bless Abraham for his faith, to provide, multiply, and bless his willingness to sacrifice everything. God blesses what we do when what we do is grounded in faith and trust in him. When it's done in faith in him and for him, when we step into the unknown at his discretion, at his prompting, at his leading and direction, he blesses that. It's true as individuals. It's true as churches also. And then he makes the impossible possible. However, what if we choose the former? What if we choose fear over faith and avoid the call, refusing to surrender and step? What if we, like these rich in Mark 12, only put in something so that we might retain control of everything, unwilling to put in everything for fear we might then retain control of nothing? When we don't surrender everything like this widow and follow the footsteps instead of these rich folk in Mark 12, then what? See, oftentimes with a decision, we ask ourselves, what happens if I do this? In a way, we've kind of been going that angle this entire sermon. What happens if I do this? What happens if I do this? What happens if I do this? That woman, for example, might have asked, what happens if I put in these two coins? If I surrender everything? What happens tonight? What happens tomorrow? What happens 1 week from now? But there's another way to see the picture. Another angle, another question that she also might have asked herself. And it's a question you and I must ask ourselves, no matter the decision before us, when it comes to surrendering everything, when faced with the same decision, we should also ask, what happens if I don't do this? What happens if I don't say those words? What happens if I don't take that job? What happens if I don't move there? What happens if I don't serve here? What happens if I don't invest there? What happens if I don't sacrifice here? What happens if I don't surrender everything? Going back to Winston Churchill and his decision, what was he to do? If the French Navy was at Germany's full disposal, no doubt would their victory over Britain again be a possible reality. So, would Winston Churchill lead Great Britain to attack a friend, an ally? Or would he run the risk of losing everything and handing the war over to Germany by doing nothing? What would he do? So much unknown, so much risk, either way. And Churchill would call this one of his hardest decisions he had to make. But in July of 1940, the British took a British naval fleet to a port in the southwest corner of the Mediterranean Sea. They then gave the French an ultimatum. Surrender your fleet, disarm them, and deactivate them, or Great Britain will attack you. That was Churchill's decision. The French refused. The British ended up attacking. And on July 3rd, 1940, they killed over 1,200 Frenchmen. Many called it a grave mistake. Terrible. Why would you do that? Why would you attack an ally? What are you thinking, Churchill? You've gone and done it now. But in attacking them, the British were able to get the French to disarm key French naval fleets after that, rendering them inactive until after the war. So the possibility of Germany getting control over them and using them against the Allies, the British got the French to take that possibility away. But that's not all. In addition to that, according to his principal private secretary, Eric Seale, Winston Churchill was convinced that the Americans, us, would be impressed by ruthlessness in dealing with a ruthless foe. And in Churchill's mind, the American reaction to the British attack on the French fleet was of the first importance. Maybe this will get them involved. Maybe this will get them to back us. And even on July 4th, 1940, Roosevelt told the French ambassador that he would have done the exact same thing as Churchill. But the world after that, especially the American allies, were now convinced that the British were for real and up to doing whatever it takes to defeat Germany and to protect the lives of their citizens and the Western world. And it's interesting to note that the United States began to provide significant military supplies and other assistance to the allies in September of 1940, 2 months after the attack on France. Even though the U.S. would not enter the war until, obviously, December 1941. And as I say, the rest is history. But when faced with the decision, Churchill didn't just ask, what happens if I do this? What will happen? How will France respond? How will Germany respond? How will our citizens respond if we do this? He also asked, what happens if we don't do this? What happens to us? What happens to our citizens? What happens to our Western world? What happens if we don't do this? Yes, it carries unknown. Yes, it carries risks. But what happens if we don't do this? See, we often ask, what will happen if we do this? And we should ask that question. What will happen if I give my $3 into this bucket and it's literally everything I have to live on? But when we are seeking God's direction and God's will, we should also ask, okay, if the Lord has brought me here to this moment and I planned and sought his counsel and wisdom and I'm placing my faith in him and so on, what happens if I don't? What if the widow doesn't give everything? Only God knows. And Jesus would later say, if you try to hang on to your life for fear you might lose it, you will lose it. But if you actually give up your life for my sake, it's key there, you will actually save it. And this is true for individuals, it's also true for churches. And tying this back into, obviously we're in this series, this legacy campaign. Next week is Commitment Sunday. It's a day really that we've been building towards. And as you know, this campaign, we have a goal to complete major renovations and updates to key areas like our worship center lobby and infrastructure. But this goal presents us a lofty challenge. Because our current monthly and yearly income must be used for our operational budget. So we have to focus on a different solution. And the solution is our legacy campaign. And so to meet the needs of this goal and to not hurt our operational budget, we, all of us, are being challenged to give sacrificially over and above our tithes and offerings. As a result, this campaign requires prayer, but obedience to God's leading, whatever that is. But I'm convinced we are ready for this challenge. And so now and this week, all of us are being challenged to reflect on God's blessings in our lives, the everything he's given us, and upon our church. And then we're all asked, in faith, in thanksgiving, in the spirit of thanksgiving, to ask ourselves to consider our part. Because each part is essential. We're better together, and together a little bit can make a big difference. But then we're all encouraged to attend next week's service, which will be a special, unique service. And during this service, all of us will have an opportunity, if we're willing and ready, to submit a commitment card or a pledge card. The card looks something like this. And everybody will get one, whether you turn it in or decide to throw it away or whatever it is, but everyone will get one. And on this card, all of us will be challenged to indicate, okay, how much we plan to give, whether it's $5, $10, or something more, above and beyond our normal tithes and offerings, towards the legacy campaign over the next 3 years. So not just this month, but over the next 3 years. So I'll give you a few examples. Example number one, let's say you get that card, you fill out the information, and you say, my commitment towards this campaign is $10, and I want to do this weekly. So you'd put $10 and you'd mark the box weekly, but your total 3-year gift would be that $10 times 52 times 3, which would get you $1,560 at $10 weekly. Or let's say you want to do it a little differently. You fill out your stuff on your card, and then you say, I want to give $100 every month for the next 3 years. So you put $100 in that box, mark monthly, but your total 3-year gift would be $3,600. 100 times 12 times 3. And then example number 3, if you said, hey, I want to give yearly to this, and I want to give $10,000 every year for the next 3 years. You put $10,000, you would mark yearly, and your total 3-year gift would be $30,000. Or if you say, hey, I don't want to give a continual gift like this, I just want to give a one-time gift, that's where the Lord is leading me. So you would get your card, you fill out your information, and over there where it says, I want to give a one-time gift, you put, for example, $5,000 or $5 or $500, whatever the number is. So all of us are going to be challenged with this card to fill it out and to give towards this campaign. But whether we're giving a one-time gift or a continual gift, again, we're all being challenged to give something because something is better than nothing. And again, we're better together, and together a little bit can make a big difference. But it's about the disposition of our hearts. It's about the size of our faith. Will we trust the Lord in everything and with everything and thereby surrender everything? Meaning, not literally give 100%, but will you have an open hand disposition? Will our Isaac, so to speak, be on the table as an act of saying to the Lord, okay, it's all yours. Take what you want, when you want it, how you want it. Will we step out of the boat? Yes, there's unknown. Yes, there's the unknown risk. But will we step out of the boat or will we stay in the boat? No matter where the Lord's leading each one of us, because it's going to be different for all of us. No matter what, in anticipation for next Sunday, and your decision, whatever that decision is, be in prayer for yourself, your family, but also be in prayer for our church, and God's continued work in and through our church. Pray that God would so move us in such a way that he moved that widow to be all in, whatever that looks like. To trust him in everything, to trust him with everything, that thereby we might submit everything to him, all of us. Asking, okay, Lord, what happens if I do this? But also, Lord, what happens if I don't? So with heads bowed, eyes closed, I'm going to invite the team forward. We're going to have a time of response. And during this time, I encourage all of us just to pray. Pray for the Lord to reveal what he's impressing upon our hearts, whether it's something in our own personal lives with a decision at work, decision with family, decision with finances, decision with health, decision with a relationship. To pray for that, say, Lord, okay, show me how I can walk by faith in this. Am I trusting you? In everything, with everything, am I surrendering everything? Is everything on the table? If not, Lord, help me to get to that place, that disposition of surrender. And then also I challenge all of us to pray for our church, what we're being all challenged to do, to pray for unity, a spirit of humility, a spirit of, man, that same disposition, no matter what the Lord leads us to do, that we're just all in, whatever that looks like. Yes, the valley is full of fog. Yes, there's the unknown and the unknown risk, but we will trust him that he's leading us, that he's with us, that he's in control, that he'll see us through to the other side. So just right now, spend time in prayer. And even as I pray, if you've got a decision to make, you need to come forward, you come forward. Father, we thank you. We love you. You are the creator, the sustainer, the provider and overseer of everything. The minutes of our day, the dollars in our accounts, our relationships, our jobs, our possessions, it's all yours, all of it. So, Father, no matter what the decision is in front of us, help us to trust you in everything. To trust you with everything and to surrender everything to you. To have that disposition of an open palm where everything's on the table. It's all yours. Help us to walk by faith and to step out of the boat, whatever that looks like for each one of us. And I pray, Lord, that no matter what that leading is, like this widow, I pray that you would bless that faith. Bless that faith. So be with our church. Give us unity, humility. We can make all the plans, but you're the one who directs our steps. So help us to trust you down into the valley, through the valley, onto the other side for your glory and praise. I'm going to ask that you stand with us as we have this time of invitation. If you have a decision to make, maybe it's church membership, maybe it's salvation or baptism, Weston, myself, we're down here to talk during this time.